Doctor, look.
Stand aside, nurse. I'm Dr. Homebrew.
Stand clear. Oh.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the show. It's Dr. Homebrew. We are back here with another homebrew to drink, and I say one homebrew because we have one homebrew. Usually we have two, but, you know, look, man, times are tough all over. You know what I mean? So don't worry about it. But we are going to do a commercial beer, and I believe it is an Oktoberfest after the homebrew judging here, so stay tuned for that because it is Oktoberfest season, and that is sort of like the best season. You know, you have Halloween season, Oktoberfest season, you have celebration season, and then my birthday. And that's pretty much the, you know, the next month and a half. So I'm very excited for the fall time of year. Here I am with Brian Cooper and Brian Schar. Boys, it's another round of Dr. Homebrew.
When is your birthday, JP?
November 7th, the best day of the year. The most grand, opulent day that everyone should enjoy.
It's the day after Learn to Homebrew Day. Cool.
Yeah.
Is that the day that she'll live in infamy? Is that Pearl Harbor Day or is that December 7th?
That's December.
December.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah. Well, you also share a birthday with Steve Altamari, I happen to know. So that's cool.
Wow. Well, there you go.
From High Water Brewing. There you go. Yeah.
All right. I love
it. JP, some campfire stout.
Good company there.
Yeah. Do that. Before anybody does anything, though, we got to learn about Five Star Chemicals or Brian's going to flip his wig. Go to 5starchemicals.com and learn about, as rightly he should, and learn about everything you need to do to make clean, tasty beer at home, which is cleaning and sanitizing that equipment of yours, that dirty, nasty-ass equipment of yours. You know the ones I'm talking about, the bottling bucket with the ball valve that you've never taken off, or the boil kettle with the ball valve you've never taken off, or basically anything which you should also...
Why would you take it off?
You because should take
if,
those
if
off.
If your work can reach it, then the five-star can too, right? PBW and
no
stuff?
No.
Wow.
I've taken apart ball valves on my boil kettle and like in the threads, it's just nasty. And it's like, gnarly. if it's there... the way mold works is like, you know, it has like the hairs on it, right? And the surface gets wet and the hairs like protect the actual mold. So you can run something over it and you can still actually have a point of contamination. So you want that organic material out no matter what. So take apart your ball valves, soak them in PBW, clean everything out. You got to do all that kind of stuff.
Listen to the wisdom of JP.
Okay.
Yeah. Trust me,
I've had
my fair share of contaminated beers. I know what's going on. anyway, David and Tristan, welcome to the show, fellas.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Yeah, of course. Of course. What do we got today? We got a Weizenbach.
Weizenbach. Yeah.
All right.
We finally have the father and son brewing team here with us. Right. It was alluded to at a previous show of some unknown date, but
yeah. When was that? Late September probably makes the most sense. But yeah, well, welcome back, David. So we got this, this Weizenbach. And is this something that you guys have made before? So if I remember correctly, this is you guys are the pair who just likes to jack the gravity up on everything by no fault of your own. It just happens, right?
I blame that one. It's that one.
It's right Tristan.
Yeah, that's that one.
Come on, Tristan. What's going on in that brain of yours, dude?
You know, things happen. There's a reason we're called Shit Show Brewing.
Yes.
Okay. That's true.
That's right. With an exclamation point in it, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I remember.
Okay. All right.
Very good.
Sort of.
So, Weizenbach, first time, second time?
Never before. First time.
Never before. Okay, first time. All right. Where do you come up with a recipe for a first time beer? Because I feel like a Weizenbach is sort of like advanced, intermediate, you know, recipe brewing. And you know, how much research do you put in to come up with a beer like that?
You know, never been to Germany, first of all.
Yeah.
Have not had that. Oh, okay. I could tell you our research. We do a thing, a 5K called a Steindash. Tris is laughing.
Okay.
It's a stupid 5K that we do for Oktoberfest every year. We just did it a couple weeks ago.
Does it also have an exclamation point in the name?
No, no, that's our that's our thing.
Oh, yeah, okay.
That's patented, trademarked. Anyway, it's a stupid 5K that we run, or really walk. Every mile that you stop, there's a German beer, and you drink a beer, and you start from lighter to darker. So that was kind of actually our introduction into German beers, and this was, I don't know how many years ago, five?
Is this five, like a thing that you two guys just do by yourselves?
And
you
no.
Bottles like every mile on the route?
No, no, it is an actual, okay. There's thousands of people there.
Permitted.
Thousands of people all like dressed this. Up.
I it like is amazing. Really cool.
Imagine
it's
having
an awesome event.
Imagine having your intro to German beer being chugging it on a walk or whatever. That just seems outlandish to me. You're like, I mean, how do you even?
Okay, so
I don't know. That's wild, man.
That was the start. Okay,
okay, all right.
So then, I don't know how many years ago did we brew that one Dunkel. We brewed a Dunkel. I think it was supposed to be called Darth Vader, but it turned out to be this black mud. And I really didn't like the way it tasted. So we took a bottle, set in a closet, and forgot about it. 2.5 years later, Tristan pulled it out of the closet in my house and said, hey, what's this? Let's do it. And it's a wheat beer. It had settled beautifully. So it's still black as night, but you could, if you hold up to a light, it had this beautiful ruby hue to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really sweet. It's a wheat beer. So it turned out to be very, very sweet. And I went, oh, my God. So maybe we can actually just we'll brew wheat beer and sit on it and see what happens. And that's where Weizenbach came from.
Aged Darth Vader.
All right. I love it.
Yeah, very aged Darth Vader.
Changed the name to it.
We did.
Mustafar?
That's right. I forgot. Mustafar, we changed the name
at that point. Yeah.
No, we called it WTF. It turned into WTF after that.
You didn't go the Star Wars nerd route on that.
That makes sense.
No.
Yeah. No, we didn't. I gotcha. All right. Well, that's cool, man. That's a cool story. A little origin story.
So, yeah, I decided we brewed this actually early June, and I tried to keep it as cool as humanly possible, but we had a massive heat wave here in the Seattle area.
Yeah.
So, once again, kept it in cases in the bedroom with the air conditioning on so we could sleep at night. So, we kept it in the mid-60s the best I could, but that's the best I could get.
That's the thing, man. It's just, you know, it's all you could do. It's the best thing you could do, man. We're trying to teach my daughter that. And today, like, you know, my wife is fixing a doll for her or whatever. And she looks at her and she goes, was that the best that you could do? It's like, never have encouraging words ever been spun around to be so insulting in all my life. But yes, it was.
Yeah. She's like, well, JP, Dad, we're going to give you a participation award.
She got you, dude. Yeah. All right, Brian Shard, let's start with you.
All right. So you guys, are you a two-man homebrew club, or are you in a larger homebrew club, or what?
No, we belong to the Puyallup Brew Crew.
Very nice.
Yeah, we meet the first Friday of every month at Off Camber Brewing. If anybody in the area wants to go, we're there.
Hey, plug your pluggables, man. Do you have a website for your club?
Facebook.
Are you doing live in-person Facebook meetings, or... still virtual, or what's your situation?
We only did one virtual during the pandemic part.
Okay.
And then as of right now, no, it's live. It's
just
all
distanced.
Live.
Yeah.
We're there.
Yeah, a lot of clubs are going back live and keep, you know, outdoors if you can, and keep.
That's the thing. It's all out. It's it's primarily an outdoor brewery.
It's pretty, pretty safe. Nice. That's good.
So absolutely. Yeah. We're outdoors. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So I like this beer, starting with the aroma. Thought it had a moderate dark malt character, no roastiness, which is good. This beer shouldn't be roasty. No hop aroma. Noticeable ethanol, but it's sweet ethanol, right? And there's styles that are high alcohol styles like a Weizenbach. They need to have that alcohol character, but it should be harsh or fusely. And this is not harsh or fusely. It's... You know, ethanol has an aroma that's a little sweet. Ethanol that's not harsh has kind of a sweet aroma that should blend and merge with the aromas of the malt. And this definitely does. Not as malty in character as I had expected. There's also kind of a banana clove expectation for a Weizenbach that I just didn't know was there. But again, having said that, there's also no off aromas. So it gave that 8 out of 12. Appearance, 3 out of 3, dark brown color, very clear. Head is low, but very persistent. I mean, I poured this several minutes ago, and this is, and it's interesting. I hold this up to my screen, and the color is influenced by what I'm looking at through the screen, but it's more orange than it appeared before. But this little, I've mentioned this before on the show. If anybody's watching this on YouTube or watching this live on Facebook, there's that little ring of foam you see on the glass. It's maybe a couple of millimeters. That's not no head. That's low head. And the fact that it's sticking around is persistent. People have this idea sometimes that a persistent head means you've got, you know, an inch of foam on your glass for half an hour. That's right. That's not what low head or persistent head mean.
Right.
But this is in a high alcohol beer. It can be tough to get this and maintain this. So good job. That's 3 out of 3 for appearance. Flavor. Initial impression is malt, dark malt, no hop flavor. There's a low bitterness. Balance is actually more with the ethanol, with the malt and the ethanol, than malt and hops in, or malt and bitterness in my opinion. And that the ethanol kind of comes out toward the finish. It's well attenuated. I start getting some low plum character toward mid palate in the finish, and I like that plum character a lot. Not as richly malty as expected, nor as banana slash clovey as I would expect, but also no off flavors, just like there's no off aromas. So that's 12 out of 20 for flavor. Mouthfeel, 5 out of 5, medium body. It's definitely warming and almost lip numbing. You know, you drink this on the weekend and you can't feel your face when I'm with you because it's, okay, I got to smile out of some people with that.
I don't know.
It's
sounds like boomer shit to me, Char. I don't know.
No, the weekend is very popular right now with the kids, I believe. The kids love the – if you ever have to say the kids love a thing, the kids have stopped loving a thing, and it's moved on to being a thing that, like, probably middle-aged guys listen to. No astringency, low carbonation, 5 out of 5. Overall impression, 7 for a total score of 35. This is a tasty high-alcohol beer. And you did a great job in fermentation, clearly, because high alcohol beer like this, you talk about a heat wave during lagering or what have you. You know, to get an alcohol character, they have you, where you have sweet ethanol and not, you know, fusel harsh nonsense. You know, it takes a lot of effort in making sure you pitch a lot of yeast, that you have some degree of fermentation temperature control. And that's a good achievement. So I definitely congratulate you on that. The things this beer really lacks to me are the sort of rich maltiness and the banana clove character that you really want in a Weizenbock. You know, I love Hefeweizen. I love Weizenbock. There was a friend in my homebrew club, Words of Wisdom. I'll give mine a shout out, Dwight. And Dwight makes a fantastic Weizenbock. He became a professional brewer, and he brews it at Clandestine. He still calls it Weizenbock, and I may be a little bit spoiled by that one because it's a fantastic beer. But I think that you're on the right track. I think your process, and I want to hear about your process later, I think your process, especially your fermentation process, is good. I think that you may want to adjust maybe your yeast. Maybe do a ferulic acid rest. And I've never done a ferulic acid rest in my life. I know that some people swear by it, and I couldn't tell you the exact temperature. You can look it up online. It's like ferulic acid. And that's if you step mash, that's a temperature you can rest at for a while and let ferulic acid develop. That's a precursor to like the clove compounds. But I think process-wise, you're on the right track. I think it's just maybe a recipe issue here that's keeping this from being up in the 40s. But good job, and thank you for sharing.
Yeah, thank you. All right, excellent. Cooper.
When I opened it, it had a nice hiss. I'm still drinking I ended up on with the short straw this time. I got the one bottle, so I had to judge it tonight when we're tasting it together. Are you guys tasting it with us? Do you still have some?
I do. Oh, yeah.
Okay, good, good, good. Yeah.
Cheers.
So a Tennessee Weizenbach. It does have a rich, bready malt and a lightly sweet alcohol up front. Those are the first things that hit. Clean with an apricot-like fruity ester. It's actually fairly substantial. It's kind of like a lot of stone fruit going on in here, which is interesting. The toast quality is quite subtle. There's almost no banana, a very, very faint clove. I'm not getting any DMS or diacetyl, so it's clean and getting very light floral kind of hops in there. Also, there's something just a bit earthy about the aroma to this. I don't know. This has like a kind of an earthiness to the aroma. Appearance-wise, it's a medium or kind of an orangey, dark amber-colored beer with a brilliant clarity and a finely formed tan head, mousse-like, and mostly finer bubbles. It really sticks around quite nicely. So again, you did that right. I gave it full points for appearance. It's a really nice looking beer. Almost like a fishbowl, like looking, you know, when you look through it, it's like, you can tell it's thick and syrupy almost. It's like got a through the glass eye kind of thing, you know, like it's substantial beer. Flavor-wise, clean maltiness up front. I got kind of a biscuit-like note in there and some bready rich notes. Not getting much in the way of Maillard products, like the kind of the color reaction stuff, you know, melanoid and kind of things. There's... also not a whole lot of banana or clove here. I would say to the point that it's not really totally to the style there. I'm getting like some peach. The fruitiness in it is really interesting. I'm getting some peach. I'm getting some grape-like notes, like white grape. Again, the beer is clean with a moderately firm alcohol in it. It's pretty substantial there. No DMS or diacetyl. It finishes semi-sweet to almost sweet. Bitterness is low and out of the way. There's almost no hop here at all. This beer is I would say wine-like, and it's actually also lightly tangy to me. It's not sour, but it's got a little like there's something a little acidic to it. It's got a little tang, a little twist.
Ooh, I like a twist.
Yeah, do the twist. So it's like it's a an enjoyable beer, but it's not quite to the Weizenbach style in the flavor either. Mouthfeel-wise, it was pretty close. Medium full-bodied towards full with a modest amount of warming, a creamy texture, medium-high carbonation, no astringency at all. It's really smooth, but also warming and substantial feeling. So that's pretty close. I guess overall, this is where you kind of like take some freedoms, like, okay, does this beer work as a Weizenbach? And in some ways it does. It's a fairly well-brewed beer and an interesting interpretation of the Weizenbach style, just lacking some of the key elements that you really want in this beer. The banana and clove primarily are almost gone. But what is there, it's pleasant and it works for this beer. I guess the first thing I would work on is maybe the yeast selection / yeast health. And maybe you can, after that, secondarily, you can play with the temperature and try to get the yeast to do, you know, things that are going to make it more happy as a Weizenbach. But yeah, just use a good pitch of a Weizen ale yeast. Another thing that would be nice would be to bring up some of the melanoidins, the Maillard byproducts. Typically this beer is in Germany would be brewed as a triple decoction. You can do a triple decoction, which is fun, or you could cheat and use you guys are into cheating, I guess, you know, use some melanoidin malt in there or something. Do something to give it a little more of that malt complexity and, get something in there, but it's got to also play off the banana clove. So when that's missing, it kind of falls a little flat, misses the mark a little bit. But again, it's a tasty beer. It's not, you know, by any means like poorly brewed. It's just a little off style. I would call it still on the low end of very good. I gave it a 31, and I think it's an enjoyable beer to drink. Obviously a little bit of alcohol in here, and I'll be interested to hear how, you know, though I remember another time you came on and you had a beer that was like deceptively strong for us, and we're just like, what? It's got that much alcohol? I'm like, okay. I just drank the whole thing and it was so tasty. I've got a beer buzz. But let's hear what you guys have to say about your recipe and the process and the fun you had brewing it.
Yeah, agreed. Go ahead, boys.
The beer buzz, was that a horrible thing? Is that what I'm getting from?
No, this is no complaints.
A problem?
Yeah, no complaints there.
Dr. Homebrew strongly advises against the beer buzz. Side effects may include happiness, despair, you know, hangovers. Yes.
Moodiness.
Yes, hangovers.
Drunk dialing your friends.
So we actually brew out of coolers. We have coolers, mash tuns done in a cooler. We did the, what do you call it? The hot liquor tank cooler into the kettle. That's nice. How we do things.
Okay.
Cool. We wrap up the cooler best we can, but we do lose a few degrees as the mash goes on. That's the one thing I'd say our biggest issue is losing temperature during a mash, actually. During fermentation, we have a standalone freezer with Inkbird, so we can actually keep temperature within 1 degree of where I want it.
I was guessing you had temperature controlled fermentation, or else a beer like this, you're going to have a hot mess of fusel alcohol if you can't keep that temperature controlled.
Right. So I usually start about 2 degrees above the minimum. Minimum on this one is 63 degrees. It's between 63 and 73 for the yeast we use. So I probably started more than likely at 65 and just slowly walked it up to about probably 70, 71. I don't know if I even hit 71. I might have gone up 70 and then dropped it right back down again after a day or two. I didn't want it too high. I wanted to keep the temperature low on this thing. Part of the deal is we
use...
If you
have an excursion up over, I mean, not necessarily over 70, but if that's the problem with uncontrolled fermentation and you have a big beer like this and you have an excursion up over 70, 80, and people can do this if you're not temperature controlling in a freezer or fridge like you are, that's even that short excursion to a really high temperature, that's what starts throwing off fusels and making the beer just undrinkable.
Yeah, the ester production and the higher alcohols for every degree you go above the recommended, it's like a tenfold increase in those things being produced or something like that. It's crazy.
Oh yeah, we used yeast we use is Imperial. We pretty much use Imperial yeast for everything. Stefan, if you guys have ever used Stefan, it is an absolute monster. It is a monster. The first time we did it, we actually brewed in this room. I put the beer in the closet that's right over here behind me. And the next day I had to remove all the clothes out of the closet. It blew up the side of the wall all over the floor.
Holy shit, are you serious?
It is a monster. I just had a little bubbler at the time, airlock bubbler, and it blew that thing completely off. It is a monster. So
Is Stefan a yeast that's specifically for like Hefeweizen?
Yes,
is the idea?
It is a Hefeweizen yeast. But it blows up like crazy, and then it just settles down. So after the second day, it just settles right down. But it blows the hell up. So this time, I know Tristan was going to grab. I usually use like growler.
Right.
Growler. We put some five star. We put some, what's it called? Five star. The Starzan. Excuse me.
Yeah, yeah.
We put some Starzan in the growler, and we put a blow-off hose in there. Ever since that day, by the way, I've been using blow-off hose ever since for every single beer.
It's a good idea if you're making a high-alcohol beer like this, and especially if you're going to try to ferment like where your clothes might be.
Yeah.
I'm reading the reviews on this yeast, and it's like, make sure you use a blow-off because, wow.
Oh, yeah.
And like,
it's a monster.
This is a monster.
So Tristan went to go grab a grunt, and he went to go fill it up and said, nah, you better grab a growler. This thing is big, right? It blows big. Oh, hell, we need a bucket. Next time, if I ever use this again, I'm using bucket because it blew up the growler. It exploded. I mean,
it's really? Are you serious?
I'm dead serious.
It did.
It blew up the growler. It exploded. I have pictures of it. It's amazing what it did. So it,
I hope that
it's,
stay,
it's
all stayed huge. Inside your freezer.
It did. It was a hell of a cleanup inside the freezer, but yeah, it did. So, yeah, that's that yeast is something. So if we need more clove or banana, we're going to have to switch yeast because that's what
we need. They also say like to get more banana, you want to under pitch or esters in general, you want to go higher temperature. So if you're starting lower, you're not going to produce as much banana. And if you're like over pitching to the point that, you know, it's going crazy to start, you're not going to get as much banana. Yeah.
So like sometimes I will differ a little bit with you, Brian, on this because I love Hefeweizen and I've brewed quite a few over the years, and I have underpitched the fuck out of Hefeweizen, and it doesn't lead to anything but phenol. And I've overpitched. I've done, and I remember when Jamil was on talking on the session, I believe, like it was over 10 years ago, that like any other beer, you have to pitch a good. You have to grow up an appropriate amount for a Hefeweizen. But Hefeweizen, unlike almost any other homebrew yeast, is you have to be in a tight bell curve for whatever that the manufacturer specifies to get the banana flavor at all, and even to get the right clove flavor instead of plastic water. Mm-hmm. And when they say you need to be at 68 degrees or something, 64 degrees, you need to be at 64 degrees. Because once you get outside of that range, you just start making plastic water. And believe me, I went through for years, and I was experimenting right and left with different yeasts, different temperatures. And I finally realized that it's just, if you're outside of a really tight range with any kind of Weizen yeast, in my experience, you end up with nothing but plastic. This is not plastic at all, but it manages. But I've also never used imperial yeast. So this, whatever strain this is, may not be quite as sensitive, but it's also, to me, not throwing the banana and clove that are ideally part of a Weizenbock or a wheat beer fermentation.
Now it's coming across more, plum and prune-like. It's interesting. And stone fruit. But, I mean, it's, like, got some really interesting, nice, fruity characters to it.
Yeah.
And combining with the alcohol sweetness and the finishing gravity that you ended up at, it's got a lot of, sweet and alcohol backbone. It's a fun beer. It's really fun to drink. Don't get us wrong at all. But, just to style, you want that delicate kind of clove banana balance, and I'm not getting any banana at all. I could talk, there's some clove, lightly spice like, but it's almost being buried by the alcohol and sweetness. So okay. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. I get a light clove, even lighter banana, but yeah, I agree. It should be more pronounced.
Okay. What was the recipe? What did you guys do?
All right. So we did, you want percentage, 46% white wheat malt. We did 21% German Pilsner, 14% Munich, Munich 2, Weyermann Munich 2. It's the 8.5 SRM one. 3.5% Kara wheat. Oh, this is going to be the JP special, by the way.
Oh, shit.
Oh, yeah. So it's just under 2%. 1.8% 40, Crystal 40. And 1.8% Crystal 80.
There we go.
My original recipe had 60, just like 1 pound of 60.
See?
So I did half a pound of 40, half a pound of 80 to kind of make up the 60 thing because I listened to the podcast.
There we go.
And because you said, instead of blasting it with one, separate them into two, one little lower, one little higher, balance it out.
Yeah, and I do think that contributes a little bit more to the dynamic. I mean, because there's a lot going on in there in the mid palate. There's a lot of flavors happening.
There's no problem with malt complexity in this beer at all.
I love the malt. The malt flavor in this beer is fantastic.
Oh, good. Very good. And then 1% midnight wheat malt. And then actually Mount Hood. We did Mount Hood hops 1.25 ounce at 60 minute. We boiled. Tristan, do you remember how long we boiled this? Because I don't think I have it written down. Did we do a 60 or 90 on this? Do you remember?
I would assume we did a 90, but
yeah, that's a good possibility.
I didn't get any DMS or anything that would come from like not boiling your Pilsner malt or not boiling enough to drive off the DMS and SMM.
Yeah.
Generally, Pilsner, a Vienna, or just most of our darker beers, we tend to do 90 minute anyway. Well,
plus, you want to concentrate the wort and get, you know, get that.
The Maillard John's going.
So our original gravity is 107.3. We ended up at 1.008. 8.7%.
What?
Wow. Yeah, that is a monster.
It's within range.
Right? Yeah, sure, man.
It's within range. Come on.
Landed at 10.08.
I'm really suspicious of this yeast. You know, I've never heard this yeast before. I'm a little suspicious. I don't know. I'm leery of something that's going to get it. That's going to go so hard, so fast, get your gravity down so low. I don't know. Maybe it's just I'm too old school and I should be more open to the newer yeasts and things, but it seems a little suspicious to me.
We do like imperial yeast and they do bring things to it. We will ferment the hell out of stuff. We really will.
We had the imperial yeast guy came on our homebrew club meetings and shut down, and he like walked us through like the whole process of propagating up a yeast, you know, from a slant to a full production batch. And it was really fun talking to them. They're smart people. I have nothing against that yeast.
But I retract my comment.
I've had other beers made with that yeast that are very, very good. And, you know, you guys are having fun making this beer. And I don't know why the banana and clove is lacking so much and why it's pushing up the stone fruit, other stuff. And also it's interesting. It's like dried out to 10.08. That's so low.
Not 10.08. It is a bit drier though. It finishes kind of dry. You have to admit it. It seems to me like it finishes kind of dry.
All the sweetness is from the malts that are in there and the alcohol. Mm-hmm. Like alcohol tricks you into like, oh, this must have finished at 10.16 or 10.18 or something, but it's not.
Yeah, it really does. That kind of ethanol sweetness from a clean fermentation. And I'll give it this. You know, this is a clean, it ferments real hard and real strong, but man, it got down, it really dried it out, and there's no fermentation off flavors from it, and you got real clean sweet ethanol.
One of the reasons why I like to keep the temperature kind of low at the beginning also is there's that much energy going on inside of that bucket. Well, it's our kettle, our fermenting kettle now. There's so much energy going on there. There's got to be some heat inside there, generated inside there. So I try to keep it really low, and hopefully that doesn't. Maybe this yeast is a little bit bigger than what we need.
What was your percentage of wheat malt again?
Oh, grand total? It was over 50. I know that.
Yeah.
That was kind of a thing. It had to be over 50.
Right. They can go up to 70.
6, 4, 50, about 51%.
Yeah.
51% wheat.
Did you have any problems when you were mashing or running off
rice hulls? We did rice hulls.
That helps.
Good.
We've had so many problems with false bottoms and bad false bottom. Tristan could tell you about the number of times we dumped mashes into buckets and coolers.
Oh yeah, well, especially with the false bottoms in the coolers, those are just notoriously sort of hard to manage.
They really are. Yeah.
How did you fix it? How did you? I'm assuming you eliminated
got a
that
new
problem.
One. There you go. Got a new one, and I love it. It works.
All right.
Good deal.
But yeah, we
literally scooping at one point.
Yeah, that's no fun.
Yeah.
One and a half pounds. 1.5 pounds of rice hulls.
Good.
So we've had problems before. I probably didn't need that many rice hulls. It was a lot.
It's not gonna hurt anything, man.
It's always better to have more than you think you're going to need.
Yeah.
And we've been bitten a couple times on this, so I probably went a little overboard. That's all right. It worked. It worked, and it seemed to went well. At the very beginning, when Tristan and I first tried this beer, how long ago was that? A month or more ago. Over a month ago.
Late August, early September, somewhere in there.
Yeah. We first tried this beer. I thought it was awful, and I thought it had off flavor. I thought it was off flavors like crazy.
Oh, wow.
And we had talked about sending it to you guys, and I went, this is going to be brutal. This is going to be brutal. I thought it was off flavors. And then like our homebrew club, they said it has a tartness to it.
Yeah.
It has calmed quite a bit. It has calmed down quite a bit. It's not nearly as tart as what it was.
I think beers like this do that. There's some like something that happens where that shit goes away and it sort of mellows out. I think I haven't had a bunch of these beers, but you know I've had a few of them and they all sort of change like that.
There's okay. definitely some acidity to it though. I got a tartness, like mm-hmm. it's not sour at all, but it's just like mm-hmm. this malty sharp kind of tartness to it. It's interesting, mm-hmm. but yeah, I think it's probably from the malts and it was harsh at first and it mellowed out over time and the alcohol smoothed out and left it a little smoother. So
yeah,
you know, it's really, it's drinkable for sure. It's not horrible beer at all. Just a little
our mash style. Our mash pH was 5.3. It's kind of funny. I did enter this into it. We entered this into a competition. And yeah, we didn't fare very well.
I pulled up the webpage for that Stefan yeast, and uh-huh. the yeast does say that it generates some tartness. So that some of that might be from the yeast.
Oh,
and what's interesting is they give a fermentation temperature range from 63 to 73, mm-hmm. which is really a wide range for a Hefeweizen yeast. So I don't know, maybe if somebody from Imperial is listening, Brian,
the show.
Come on at some point and they can talk to us about, you know, what temperatures maybe best generate clove,
sure. or
what temperatures best generate banana if they're interested. And that might be a fun conversation to have with them.
Yeah.
But just absolutely. From a blind perspective, I would personally tend towards just going towards the middle. Like, yeah. And you start on the low end, you know, might do, you know, it's not going to be as happy and like, well, obviously it was happy, but like you might not get it generating the same flavor profile that you want. Like it's going to generate a different flavor profile at 62 than it is at 65 or higher. So, you know, don't go crazy with it, but why not just go in the middle?
And could you do that, Cooper, with like, just like a 1 gallon DME, you know, you just take a pound of DME, mix it in a gallon of water, and ferment it with that yeast at different temperatures.
Three different. Yeah, that's a good.
I mean, that way you don't have to make this beer two or three different times to figure out where you're going to best ferment that yeast. And then you go, okay, so this yeast works better for me at 72. So then now let's make this again at 72, knowing that things are going to be a little different. But at least you'll get the, you know, more of the banana clove. I don't know. I just came up with that idea.
Sounds like a lot of work. And, just knowing what we know of Dave and Tristan at this point, like, they're just going to want to brew and have fun and end up with 10 gallons or 5 gallons of beer at the end of the day and have some fun. But, an anal retentive brewer with, like, a penchant for entering competitions and doing the best they can and making it perfect, they may want to do that sort of a thing. You know,
that's what I did out of sheer desperation to make a good Hefeweizen.
There you go.
Except I did it in 5 gallons because I had like my, I wasn't smart enough to think about just getting my spaghetti pot out and doing it. So I would make like a 5 gallon batch with extract. And I was just like, you know, fuck it. I'm not even going to do with like an all grain. I'm just going to use extract and I'm going to ferment it at different temperatures. And for whatever yeast I was using, I settled on 66. I remember I called it a Route 66 Hefeweizen. And that was the magic number for that yeast. And I was pretty happy with that.
When in doubt.
Sometimes you have to do it.
All right, guys.
Kicks on Route 66.
There you go.
That's our advice to you.
David, Tristan, do you have anything else for the doctor's homebrew? Any other questions?
You, bud?
I think I'm good.
No, that's good.
Okay. Wonderful. Yeah. Well, we'll let you go.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, absolutely appreciate this.
Yeah, looking forward to more beers.
Send us another beer sometime. This. And do invite us to this thing with the 5 mile walk with
Steindash. We don't have Lederhosen, but we have our own little outfits. Yeah, we dress up for this.
Of course,
you want to join this little soiree.
Oh, it's a blast. Yeah.
All right, everybody. Hang on real tight. We'll be right back. This is Dr. Homebrew.
I'm sorry to tell you this, but we're going to have to pour you out.
Back to Dr. Homebrew.
Thanks for hanging on, everybody. I appreciate it very, very much. All right, this is where I get to have fun. I mean, look, I'm teasing. I get to have fun every time on this show. But specifically because we're going to be drinking an Oktoberfest from Sierra Nevada Brewing Company. Little brewing company. Don't know if you've heard about it. But this year's Oktoberfest fucking slaps so hard. I love this beer very, very much. And I'm excited to be cracking open and drinking it. And we're going to be talking a little bit about the style Oktoberfest, judging the beer as an Oktoberfest, and just kind of talking in general about how do we get some of these flavors in our own beers. Mr. Cooper.
How do we get that flavor in our beers?
How do we do that? I mean, look at that head. I mean, it's just like perfect. The head's not going anywhere.
I just took mine out of the fridge. It's really cold.
Me too. this has been maybe 2 minutes at room temp. I mean, the head is still there, you know, compared to like some other. This is the frustrating part of like a home brewer, right? And it shouldn't really be frustrating. But like, I could never, ever get head to last this long on my beers, ever. I mean, the head is declining. It's going down a little bit, but it's still a good 3/4 inch.
So you're saying it's difficult for you to get head for a long time.
Well, yeah. I mean,
changing the topic.
Look, Char, we're all getting older, okay? Don't pretend that anybody over... Anyway, go ahead. It's still going.
I don't recall seeing this in years past. I may have been like living in a hole during the whole pandemic, but this you seems have. Like something new that they did this year.
No, it's... Cans, right? Oh, in the cans, yes. I believe that...
Cans.
I believe that they're... their collaboration Oktoberfests have been in cans, but I think this is the first time their actual straight up Oktoberfest is in cans. Yeah.
So I don't remember seeing this. I don't buy their Oktoberfest every year, but usually it's in bottles. And cans are such a very good protector of beer.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, I mean, sometimes, I don't know, sometimes you can get a can that's like undercarbonated a little bit and other things, but like, as for protecting the beer and keeping light out of it and keeping it, you know, sealed with no oxygen in there, it's a good package. There's another reference somebody could play off of and make a bad joke. But
no.
Anyway, the Oktoberfest Amber Märzen, 5.5% ABV, Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, Chico, California, at Mills River, North Carolina. Okay, and Mills River, North Carolina.
You going to do the government warning too?
No. Well, I will if you'd like.
No, I don't. It's fine.
It's a, yeah. Please recycle?
Nope. Okay, go ahead. What do we think about this? It's an Amber Martin, but like it is, this is like the color of pale ales in like the 90s. It's kind of wild to me. Like I imagine a Märzen being a lot darker than this beer.
What's interesting is I pulled up the style guide. Sorry, pulled up the style guidelines.
Yeah,
and comments to 6A Märzen. Modern domestic German Oktoberfests are golden. It's like more of a fest beer. American craft versions of Oktoberfest are generally based on this style, and most Americans will recognize this beer as Oktoberfest. Historic versions of this beer tended to be darker toward the brown color range, which is exactly what this is. This is more of a traditional Oktoberfest than a fest beer.
For sure.
Okay. Is there such a thing as Amber Märzen? Is that like an actual style?
No, I think they're just trying to give as much description and as little words as possible about the beer.
Okay.
It's amber colored and it's a Märzen. It's beautifully clear. Like it is
absolutely
amazingly, pristinely, like brilliantly clear. You can just see through it like a mirror, like
so. Amber Märzen, yeah. I would imagine
see through it like a mirror.
That's almost like you can see it through it like a mirror. You can't. It's almost like saying it's just a lighter colored Märzen.
Yeah, one of the tags 6A Märzen is amber color, so that or amber lager family. So it's a tag.
Oh, okay.
Hashtag amber.
Got it. Okay,
that should help you find this beer.
Got it.
It's like a perfectly clear fishbowl. I'm like looking at the image myself on the screen as we're recording this, and it's like perfectly clear, like TV quality, but amberized. It's cool.
That's right.
Can you see me through this beer?
No.
Can anybody see me? Okay. How about now? No. Okay.
You can see me, sort of.
I can. I can see you really well through there. You look like Walter White in that through the actual beer there.
Now you know my secret.
All right, let's start on this beer.
I'll buy some blue meth from you after the show.
Right? It's really good. Not. Okay, let's talk about this beer. I had a romantic experience with this beer at my local ale house, the First Street Ale House in downtown Livermore.
Oh, do tell.
And I ordered, I met up with my buddy Don, who came down from Idaho. He's a member of our club, the Mad Zymergists, but came down for a weekend to attend a buddy's wedding. But we got him for an evening, and my son and I took him to the ale house, and I ordered a Moschine of Sierra Nevada Oktoberfest. And before he landed there, he was coming in, and I sat down, and I'm like, I'm going to do this. So I ordered the liter Moskrug beer, and just like the feel and the holding of that beer, like you want to be in Germany holding a real, a Märzen or a Fest beer, a Bock or a Dunkles or something. And like just something about the glassware. It was my first beer of the night, so I was like, start out with this. And I wanted to know if he wanted one, but I think he had a couple of beers at a brewery prior, so he wasn't game. But we did a toast. I'm like, you can really take these Moskrugs and just like smack them together really hard and they don't break. And it's like, it's an art form almost, just to smash them almost as hard as you can and just get that clank. And like, so I didn't have that experience, but I did have like, you hold it through the handle and you put your hand around the beer. This is nothing about the beer at all, but it's just like the experience of having an Oktoberfest. I know it was canceled again this year in Munich, and I hope it comes back soon. And this whole nightmare is over. And people can share germs again freely and not worry about it so much. There's something about being in Munich and holding a Moschstein at the Hofbräuhaus or somewhere, and cheersing people with those Moschsteins and drinking really good German beer. And like, I've been there a number of times, and there's a certain romanticization of these beers for me that I appreciate a good, well-brewed version of a Märzen or a Fest beer. But I have to say, I honestly prefer the Märzen, like for its richness. It's got that, just that Munich malt sweetness that you don't get from a Fest beer. It's like a Fest beer, it's brewed up a little bit to like 6.5-ish territory. And it's just designed to be really smooth and easy to drink and get everybody happy real fast. So,
right.
Which can be kind of a recipe for disaster in a giant festival, which I don't know. I've never been to Oktoberfest. I'd kind of like to go, but I've heard that it's like, is overrun by Italian teenagers who are just smashed beyond belief. Maybe just that was what it was 20 years ago.
Go to Munich any other time and just go to the beer halls and share.
I've been to the Hofbräuhaus in Munich one time, and it was, I was off at like a smaller, its place is cavernous and it's like a rabbit warren. And I wasn't in the main hall, which is, we kind of walked through part of the main hall and it was spectacular, but you could still hear all the music and it was still a lot of fun and the beer is great. So it's
well, there's a courtyard too, and you can sit out on the, on the outdoor area of it too, and still hear everything. And you can find little corners of it. That place has a little place in my heart, but definitely.
I can tell the romance is between you and the Hofbräuhaus. I can tell that's like, you could probably marry the building if you.
No, but also, I mean, then you but the romance is wandering from Augustiner and having dinner, having some good schnitzel, and going to Schneider, having some really good.
I'm just being silly, Brian. No, that sounds pretty awesome.
And then wandering down towards the Hofbräuhaus, and then you look, and then there's the Hard Rock Cafe across the street, and you're like just laughing because, like, who goes in there but tourists? And, like, I mean, of course, lots of tourists go in the Hofbräuhaus, but. Man, it's such a cool, like, comfortable design space for.
I mean, as an aside, who the fuck goes into the Hard Rock Cafe from America, where we have 1,000 of them, when you're in Munich? Why would you do that?
Why would you?
Maybe it's like, you know, Bosnians go in there to get a taste of America. I don't know.
Yeah. So we should talk about the Meriton style a little bit. What do you think?
We can, because this is a Meriton.
Go ahead and start us out.
Okay. So I had my window for the style up. And let me pull this right back up. Sorry, bro. You can tell this is the second segment of the second show in one night, because I'm not tipsy, but I'm not perhaps on my A game at this point. All right, 6A. It is in the 2015 guidelines as 6A. As you were saying earlier, this kind of evolved. Oktoberfest beers kind of evolved into what they call a fest beer today.
Right. And the beer judging guidelines, they used, in 08, they were combined as Oktoberfest Meriton. So.
Exactly. So this is more in a style comparison. I often like to skip to the end of the style comparison to kind of get an idea of where on the spectrum a beer is going to fall. So it's not as strong and rich as a Dunkelsbach, more malt depth and richness than a fest beer, with a heavier body and slightly less hops, less hoppy and equally malty as a Czech amber lager. So that kind of gives you an idea of where this beer is. Commercial example, Polliner Oktoberfest. That's one that's available pretty readily, and maybe this one too.
Yeah, overall impression is a good place to go to. Like it's an elegant, malty German amber lager with a clean, rich, toasty, and bready malt flavor, restrained bitterness, and a dry finish that encourages another drink. The overall malt impression is soft, elegant, and complex, with a rich aftertaste that is never cloying or heavy. I mean, that's a perfect description of the beer for me. Like, that's a really good, you know, way to call it. It's definitely like a malt forward beer. It's smooth, it's elegant, and definitely the key to it. Part of the key to it is the dryness. It's not a sweet beer. You know, there's hints of sweetness just from the malt, you know, the malts that are in it. But for a 5.5% beer, this tastes like it could be a lot heavier and a lot richer. There's a lot going for it, where it's just like, okay.
Yeah, and this is a beer where characteristic ingredients, traditional German versions emphasized Munich malt. Decoction mash was traditionally used. I'd be curious if Sierra Nevada decocts this, but you can definitely tell this is a Munich malt focused beer, both in the aroma and in the flavor.
For sure, yeah.
See, hop bitterness is moderate, hop flavor is low to none, aroma, no hop aroma. Yeah, that's very much what we're tasting here.
Yeah, there's no hops in this. I'm convinced.
What's also interesting is that the style guidelines call this at an ABV between 5.8 and 6.3, but the can, I was sitting in my kitchen now, of course, I recall saying this is 5.5.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which, frankly, I appreciate. And I think, you know, for me, and I get where, you know, they're trying to maybe get a lot of people real happy fast at Oktoberfest. But if you're going to be sitting down for like a full day drinking a lot of this, I would much rather have this be 5.5 than 6 point something.
For sure.
Oh, absolutely, dude. That's one of the reasons I love this stupid beer so much. It doesn't drink like a 5.5 beer. There's a lot of flavor going on.
I love a beer. And that's like what you always talk about milds that way, JP, right?
Yeah.
That it doesn't have to be, and I don't mind a high alcohol beer. You know, I got some Narwhal sitting in my fridge right now. It's freaking 11% or something. But you're not going to sit around and drink Imperial Stout all the live long day at a festival, because you'll die, but B, you'll pass out before you die. You can have a beer that's 5.5%, 5%, and it's got color, and it's got flavor, and it's got aroma, and it's fun to drink, and it's complex, and it doesn't have to be huge to be flavorful and interesting.
Exactly, and I feel like we're sort of learning this late in the game, in the craft beer game.
I mean, this is a really quintessential lager. Like, the Germans, like, really paid a lot of attention for hundreds of years to how to do a good lager beer and, you know, the right yeast to use and the right temperature treatment and just everything. And this, you know, so this as a commercial calibration, this is an American version of a German beer. But to me, it stands up to a lot of the classic German beer styles. And maybe part of it is because it's fresh, it's made here in America where we're drinking it. And it's you know, well done by a really, you know, smart brewery that knows what they're doing. And you go to Germany and it's going to taste a little different, but similar in a lot of ways. You know, this is just, I think Sierra Nevada really did knock it out of the park this year. And just to get an American made Oktoberfest of this quality to me is kind of something to behold, like where you should pay attention. Cause like, this is kind of like what it tastes like in the homeland a little bit. It's pretty damn close. Yeah. And they put it in cans, which I think was a smart decision. It takes care of the beer. It's also easier to port around, and you can take a six pack with you camping or whatever. And it's a little easier to deal with and in your cooler and you know, share. And it's just, I don't know. I'm happy with this beer. I'm really happy with this beer. I think it's definitely in the 40s points wise, if you want to score it.
Oh yeah, we have to.
As a German, you know, so like we're tasting an American Oktoberfest, an American interpretation of Oktoberfest, Märzen, but it's, I think this is probably approaching mid 40s for me, probably 44, 45.
I totally really agree with that for all the reasons you just said. And I wonder if one of the reasons why, you know, the clearer, you know, higher alcohol fest beer is what we think of as an Oktoberfest beer now, as opposed, in addition to the fact that in 1990 it became the standard festival beer, is that, you know, unless you're going to a high-end, really good German specialty retailer like Haus Stout in Redwood City, where they get the stuff, I'm convinced, more like overnighted to them rather than sitting on a ship. Yeah. But because you can get fresh German beer, but you got to pay for it to get like sent by an airplane. Because in California in particular, the East Coast doesn't have this problem as much, but you're shipping beer in a container on a ship, and it takes, you know, a few weeks to get across the Atlantic. And even though the Atlantic is cold, those containers or those ships can get hot. So it's just sitting there in the sun and the containers cooking. You know, it gets to New York, New Jersey, gets unloaded, put it on a train. What's in the middle of this country? A giant freaking desert. And it's going to sit in those cars unrefrigerated, cooking in the desert on its way to California. And it's going to get staler. It's going to get darker. It's going to get more cardboardy, more honey. And maybe it becomes kind of an approximation of this, in a sense, on its way. But to get this fresh, I totally agree with you, Brian, that this is the fact that we're getting a super high-quality Oktoberfest style from a major American brewer where you can pretty much purchase in all 50 states, a whole lot fresher than you can from Germany. That's really fantastic. And I agree with you. I would probably score this, you know, 44, 45, you know, 46. This is getting close to the platonic ideal of what an Oktoberfest beer ought to be.
They've obviously studied it. And, you know, one of the smart things they did too was starting the brewery in North Carolina, where they can distribute like from the coasts in and, you know, represent their beers in a wide swath of America. And have it be fresh, like, and judge where, okay, our distribution should be here for Ohio or this or that and whatever, and just figure it out and like get the freshest beer possible to the most people in America possible. And, you know, Sierra Nevada started out with a home brewer, you know, just buying a bunch of equipment from, you know, what was it? Like they just, it was milk equipment. It was like
dairy stuff.
A dairy plant, like okay, we'll get some used dairy tanks and make beer in it. And in 1980, and like when we, like America had become such a beer desert, and like just two or three majors, and just that was it. And it was like, okay,
how can this beer be better? What would you do to make this a 50 pointer? Let's critique Ken and all the boys and girls.
The head fell flat after, you know, 20, 30 minutes of us gabbing on about it. But
this is a really good topic. We could probably spend a whole segment talking about.
We are.
That's
what this is. That's what this segment's about, Brian.
Not this specific beer, but in general, what's the difference between a 45 and a 50 pointer? And to me, that's that subjective, that last few points in that bell curve. How do you squeeze those 5 points out? It just comes down to something that's so subjective and so ineffable that I don't know that it's quantifiable. I mean, Cooper, what do you think?
Well, I'll tell you, I've had a 49 point. It was a Perry at a homebrew competition.
Wow.
Where like I was sitting next to the judges that judged it. And it was my friend, Roger St. Denis, and another brewer another judge. And
oh, I know Roger. Yeah. He's a good guy.
And they tasted this Perry and they're just like amazed. And like, they couldn't not score it a 49. It was like to the verge of the best fermented beverage they had ever had. And that's the thing, like, you need to think about the best experience you've ever had, not just environment, but just quality of the beverage that you've ever had in your life. And it's a world-class plus, like, this hits all the marks all the way across, and I wouldn't improve it. There's no way I could improve it almost. And so
why isn't it a 50?
I couldn't disagree with them on that one. But I do.
One should have been a 50, but I wasn't there.
But yeah,
I agree with Cooper that it's kind of like it has to be something that so knocks you off your socks so much that you're going to remember it for years, if not the rest of your life, for how good it is. And that's why in some ways 45, 46 is kind of like on the high end, the 13 on the low end, right?
Here's
the courtesy 13 that you don't go below.
Yeah.
But then on the high end, there's like, if you get to a 45, 46, in some ways, you've effectively gotten a 50. And, you know, Jamil has talked about on, God, The Session or Brew Strong or one of those shows years ago about giving 50s and that we shouldn't be as stingy with those as we are. And I believe he's right. Okay.
Yeah, but I wouldn't hesitate to give a 49-50 if
you're getting bullied into it. Brian's bullying you into it. No, Char's bullying you into it. Cyberbullying. No. Let's call the I'm just kidding.
I'm gonna come to your house, Cooper, unless you give it. No, I'm not gonna do
that. With that Perry, Roger and the other judge were looking at each other and they're like, how can we not score this a 49? Should we give it a 50? This is amazing. This is memorable. And when I tasted it, it was as memorable to me as it was to them. And it was a life defining experience almost. It was like a really, you know, it was a big deal to me to taste that Perry and really like, wow, this is an amazing.
You know, you chuckle when you say that, Brian, but I think you're right that to be something that is a 50, that is that platonic ideal of what a beverage, that category should be. It should be something so spectacular that it is memorable in a serious manner. And if you're going to forget about it like a day later, maybe it was a 45, but it wasn't a 50, if that makes any sense at all.
It has to be in the scoring guide on the bottom. It says stylistic accuracy, technical merit, and intangibles, and all three of them would have to be all the way to the top of the scale on that. Yeah. It would have to be wonderful, flawless, and classic example.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's take our last break and we'll come back. We'll wrap up the conversation because I do have a question to ask about it and a comment to make. and then we'll get out of here. So hang on, everybody. It's Dr. Homebrew. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back, everybody. Dr. Homebrew. We are wrapping things up, talking about Sierra Nevada Oktoberfest, Amber Mayertson. And, you know, I asked the question about how could you make this a 50-point beer, and you guys effectively dodged the answer to that, and that's fine. I'm just kidding. For me, no. Okay. I think it's a little too bitter. And I don't have much. I mean, look, I'm drinking tea with like lemon juice because I got this fucking cough. But there's a brightness, I think, to it. Maybe it's too carbonated. There's a thing that's throwing it off in my mind. An Amber Mayertson is just this malty thing that sort of rolls around in your mouth and kind of dissipates, and it just is what it is. But this is sort of on the brighter bit. There's like a bitterness at the end. Do you guys get that too?
I don't get it as a bitterness, but I can understand the carbonation is definitely on the higher.
Yeah, I don't want to say sharpness, because I feel like sharpness sometimes is a negative.
Well, carbonic acid is CO2 in suspension of any liquid. So that is something that gives a little impression of sharpness. And with a fest beer, you can push that up and the sharpness doesn't hurt it too much because it's still really dry and really easy to drink. Mm-hmm. But with a Mayertson, maybe you want to keep it a little touch more restrained and have the maltiness shine through more nicely and not have it have that.
Yeah, it almost feels like
sharp edge.
It almost feels like a hop flavor, hop bitterness. And I wonder if it's for like American palates.
You just hate hops and you want less hops in every beer that you taste.
We've had this argument for like 5 years. I don't hate hops at all.
I've had fresh German beer in Germany and stuff, whether Kolsch or Mayertson, and there is a firm bitterness in those beers. There's a firm bitterness in a Mayertson in Germany that is, it's not an IPA, but there is a firm bitterness there that I don't think this is any stronger.
Right.
Okay. This is less bitter than some German Oktoberfest I've had.
Americans' impressions of German beers and Belgian beers, for that matter, are twisted towards the lower end of the bitterness for the scale, because when you get a beer that's been transported all this distance and it's less bitter and it's less harsh and biting. It's less fresh. And that stuff has kind of died off and you're like, oh, this is what it should be. But it's not really. When you get a Saison in Belgium, and it's just, it can be gnarly and pretty damn bitter and sharp and biting. And you get it here or the same beer, and it's just like, that's all just died down. It's like, oh, okay, this is what it's supposed to be. No, not necessarily. Go there and drink it.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, and I just wanted to make sure that wasn't, because I thought, well, maybe the bitterness is sort of, you know, so more people can drink it because that's all we're addicted to now.
I can see what you're tasting, but like, yeah. I appreciate this beer way more than I appreciate a fest beer at 6.5%.
I 100% agree.
Totally agree.
Yeah,
totally
and don't get me wrong, I love this beer. And my only nits to pick were just trying to see if we can get it from a 45 to a 50 or a 49, if that even can. I mean, I know what you guys are saying about it has to be a beer you'll never, ever forget. But
you just keep talking for another 20 minutes and you can come over to my house and twist my arm really hard and I could just be like, okay, it's okay.
No one will care anyway. You know what I mean?
I don't know.
Someone's going to go tell Sierra Nevada, I'm sure.
It is all right. damn worthy of mid to high 40s score. And I think I'm impressed to be able to drink this quality of a craft beer in this day and age. And we're lucky to be living in this age instead of 30 years ago when it was
instead of 10 years ago. Jesus. The distance beer has come in quality, hazies aside, is remarkable. Get ready though. If you guys don't like this kind of fucking content, get ready for when celebration happens. We're doing this again for celebration. So just everybody realize that's going to happen. Thank you very much to our guests for sending in beer. We really appreciate it. Shit Show Brewing.
That was hilarious. That's a hilarious name for
your brewery. If you guys want to be on this show, email Brian at thebrewingnetwork.com.
That's Brian with an exclamation point. I mean an I.
That's right. Don't email JP. Don't email Dr. Homebrew. Just make everything go to Brian. I don't want to see these emails. I just want to see your stupid faces on the screen when we zoom you in and drink your beer.
It's
so,
really me running this whole show.
Brian at thebrewingnetwork.com. All right, everybody. Thanks a lot for tuning in. I really appreciate it. And thank you to our sponsor, Five Star, and everybody else you've heard during the breaks. We would not be doing the show without them. So thank you very much, and thank you for listening. Until next
time,
take it easy.
Thank you, sir.
Looking for that.